Greetings and salutations, everyone. This is AC2GS, Roy here. I have to tell you guys, Dick is taking a bit of a leave of absence from the technical net. He has some GI problems that are making it difficult for him to sit in front of a radio for a long period of time. So he might drop in on us, and I hope he does. And he might take back the reins. So for the time being, I'm not taking over the chair. I'm just going to kind of keep it warm for him. So I hope you'll all be kind and bear with me. As I mentioned last week, I am not an electrical engineer. I do this as a hobby, and I hope I can help. And I hope I can rely on the rest of the people participating to help along with me. So this is a technical mess. I do have the usual stories, but I'll save them until later. And I'm not quite sure if everyone has an interest in discussing the COVID virus. We did a lot of it last week, and no doubt people have read about it and heard it on the cable TV. They might be tired of it, so I will tell a short amount of information about it when I start my little science talk segment and leave it up to you guys to either ask more questions about it and get into a conversation on the subject, or we can move on to lighter topics. So anyway, let me unkey and ask if anyone wants to check into the Kings County, the Lymar Technical Mess. Also, one second, I have to pick up a phone. I'll be right back. Testing 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Well, let me find out, because I heard from Richie K&B that nothing I said went across. So could someone simply say hello and tell me that they've heard what I've been talking about for the last 2 minutes?
WS2N. No, you've been coming through on both repeaters, Roy. I've been hearing you. Don't know why Rich didn't hear you.
I think I'm coming through loud and clear, in case you want to say them.
All right, my error, Roy. Sorry about that. K2KND.
Okay, with that settled, I mean, I don't have... Dick is able to listen to his own signal without it confusing him. I have a more visual method where I'm looking at the waveform, so I can sort of tell when I'm transmitting or when the repeater is timed out or when there's a lot of noise and problems on the repeater. But I'm not actually listening to the signal. Anyway, enough of this behind baseball. If anyone would like to either ask a question or bring up a topic tonight on the technical net, please give us your first name and your call sign.
K2GJE, Ed, can you answer a virus question? Over.
Yes, I can answer a virus question. The only thing is that, like I said, the way I had it planned out would be to give you a little bit of a status report on the virus. I assume you're talking about the same virus. And then we can go into the nitty-gritty details as much as anyone wants to go over. I assume when you say viruses, you're talking about the coronavirus.
Correct.
We'll have lots of time, apparently, to discuss it. I just wanted to see if anyone wanted to do anything of a technical nature towards the first hour of the show.
KG2RY.
Yes, David recognized. Joe, I heard you earlier check in before you probably found out that Dick wouldn't be here tonight, so I just want to check with you whether you just want to kind of cancel that or put your name on the list or what you're planning to do.
Well, W. Troy, I was going to ask you a specific question about a specific piece of test equipment. on use and safety measures in using it so it's not be damaged. So if you're not an electrical engineer, you may not know the answer to it, so maybe I'll just table it for another time.
Okay, Joe, fair enough. I understand that. Anyone else want to put their name on the list for any technical questions tonight, please? Give me your first name and your call sign.
WS2N, Paul, one question for you, Roy. You might know this one.
Okay, Paul, what question would that be?
I know you operate, of course, 2 meters, but also 70 centimeters. A lot of these radios, dual band, and let's say you're hooked up to a 2-meter antenna, like you normally are, and you click over to 40 centimeters and transmit. Now you're going into the same 2-meter antenna. First of all, does it work? Do you get out? And second of all, if you do it, can you, you know, the SWR be so bad that you could, you know, ruin your dual band radio? What do you think? Back to you.
I have a comment on that, WHYY.
Sure, Joe, comment away.
Depending on the frequency that their antenna is resonant on high band, or 2 meters, exactly, if you look at 3 times the frequency, you'll find it matches again. It provides a low impedance to the radio transmission line. The only problem is you're transmitting to an antenna that's now 3/4 wavelengths long instead of a quarter wave, so it's going to have a little different pattern, maybe slightly compressed pattern to the horizon. But it may match. It depends on the initial frequency. Sometimes it's not exactly like 3 times the frequency either. It can vary a little bit either way, depending on the length of the coax. You look at it for the coax end of the system. I have seen that before, that effect happened before.
Hey, thanks a lot, Joe. There are a lot of antennas that are specifically designed for both 2-meter and 70-centimeter operation. I don't even know if you can practically get too many that are just specced only for 2 meters these days. It seems to be in, you know, a kind of a built-in feature like 3D television was for a week and a half.
Okay, well, that would be good. But, you know, right now my 2-meter, I have the Cushcraft 10-element beam. It's naturally, you know, it's perfect for 2 meters. I was just wondering what would happen if you would damage the radio. Just wondering. Doesn't sound like it, though. I would just like to use it just even for listening. I know that would be good for that. But I just worry about accidentally transmitting, and the next thing you know, you blow your finals or something. Back to you, Roy.
WP2BC for comment.
Rich.
Yeah, hi, this is WP2BCE, Bill. Yeah, I checked my set out on 440 one time, and the SWR was really high.
Okay, yeah, well, it doesn't sound like a good idea then to do that on purpose. But, you know, how it is. You listen to the radio, you listen to 440, and next thing you know, you accidentally transmit on the wrong band. And, you know, I think I'll avoid that unless somewhere down the road I get a dual band antenna like Roy said. Very good. Back to you, Roy.
It was easily over 5 to 1.
Yeah, see, that's the other thing. I don't have a SWR meter to double check. You know, I would just be plugging a radio in, and you know, I'd have to, that would be another thing I'd have to get. Just, you know, your HCs and your mobile radios don't have the SWR like the HF. At least I don't know of any that does. Roy, over to you, AC2GS, WS2N.
Other option, of course, is if you have any friends out there who have a VNA, and they're selling at ridiculously low prices these days. The Nano VNA, I think, goes for a big $50. You might kind of play antenna analyzing with it and see exactly what your visual would be with a given frequency in the 70 centimeter band.
Okay, it's just something I'm thinking about, and yeah, I'll consider that. That's a good idea. Because, you know, you don't want another, I don't want another radio going to the radio graveyard. I got too many of them. Back to you, Roy.
Okay, very good, Paul. David, KG2RY, you had a question tonight or a topic?
Good evening, Roy, and good evening, everyone. Hope everyone is having a fantastic evening so far. Roy, I had this idea, you know, just sort of went through my mind, sort of like a walkie-talkie that operates on 20-meter upper sideband, and it's like a two-way radio. You can get about 15 watts out of it. It has a lithium battery pack that's rechargeable, and the antenna is 38 inches. It's like one of those high Q width, you know. I thought about this, and I'm wondering what your thoughts are about it. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, if you want to operate mobily that way on 20 meters, then I would say, and the price is right, certainly, then I would say go for it. The problem is that the efficiency of shortened antennas on 20 meters is not great. You know, as Vic has repeatedly discussed in the infinitesimal dipole, that if you have a relatively lossless tuning system, it doesn't have an effect, but most likely any real-world handy-talkie is going to have some significant insertion loss in impedance, but diminished efficiency, and other ground problems from judging from whatever location you plan to operate it at. So it's not going to be the optimal device, but if the price is right and you're inclined to try out mobile 20 metering, then so be it.
Well, I saw some person, a ham radio operator, operate one of these very tiny Elecraft, and he fed it into a loop, and the loop was attached to the top of the radio, and he could walk around with it, and you know, somehow it was getting out. I've had pretty good results with these 38-inch antennas, and I couldn't believe that I was making contacts with it from my, you know, from my apartment indoors. And I guess maybe the idea that I had was that people can they can communicate even locally or long distance, but like, you know, like from New York to Florida, easy. You know, from New York to Texas, easy. You can probably do it with 15 watts and a small antenna. Go ahead.
You'd be dependent, as we always are, on propagation conditions. If the ionization isn't with you, then it's all for naught. But if propagation is helpful for you, I often tell this story of a guy who set up an antenna company. Before he did that, as a joke, I guess, he took a 100-watt light bulb, put it on a lamp post, a wooden lamp post, and he got a worked all state certificate, which only goes to show where there's a will, there's a way. There are different antenna designs with different efficiencies. My gut sense is that shortened whip antennas aren't really great as far as efficiency is concerned. On the other hand, you were mentioning the loop, a magnetic loop. One of the great features of a magnetic loop is that they're relatively small. They have no ground problems. You can put them, you know, 6-7 feet above the ground, and they're happy-go-lucky. You don't have to get them high up anyplace. And they work low power to begin with, so you don't have to worry about big, heavy variable capacitors. So if you're using something like a magnetic loop, I think the efficiency, if you do it right, is decent enough to get away with QRP or a little bit above QRP. And Elecraft radios are excellent radios. They've I know a lot of people who own them and they love them, Soon there'll be the ICOM 705, which will be, I hope, a little bit less expensive than the other craft. And there's a Zibu from China that's sort of a compact, low-power radio. So, like I said, I mean, I think it's a great idea in general. I think probably a magnetic loop is a better option than a whip antenna, but, you know, you can try it and see if it works for you.
QSL, thank you, Roy. You steer me in the right direction. I think the magnetic loop is the answer. But, you know, when I was using that 38-inch whip, you know, I was using it, I realized that I only get 60 to 80 kilohertz of bandwidth on it before I have to readjust the tip. So I guess that's probably the big compromise. And so the shortened antenna, I was making contacts, but I didn't have much bandwidth. Go ahead.
Well, you can't con the laws of physics, unfortunately. If you take something, you got to give something back. And with all shortened antennas, what you're effectively doing, and Dick has mentioned this repeatedly, the Q factor, which can be described as in a whole manner of different ways. The shorter that you make an antenna and even electronically resonate it with impedance matching and the inductor capacitor network, the higher the Q for that radiating antenna. The higher the Q is, the narrower the bandwidth, and the case is significant in a magnetic loop. One of the benefits, as I mentioned, is it operates pretty good. It's a small size, it can be close to the ground, and it does great with low power. The price to pay on the other side is it acts as a very shortened dipole, and it has a very high Q. And because of that, it has a very narrow bandwidth, so you have to retune that variable capacitor over and over. If you have a full-length dipole, you'll have a greater bandwidth than any electronically resonated dipole that's shortened and then re-resonated. So that's sort of the price that you have to pay for a shortened antenna. So they all have low Q. They all have high Qs, which it means that they all have a very narrow bandwidth that they operate on before you have to retune and re-resonate them.
Okay, Dr. Roy, thank you very much. KG2RY.
You're welcome, David. Anyone else with any questions or any topics tonight as a technical nature? Yes, what's your call sign? Someone said that they wanted to talk about the short whip. What's your call sign? One more time, if anyone wants to bring up a topic, ask a question, or identify themselves, this is AC2GS with the Limewalk Technical Med tonight. Okay, very well. It seems we've exhausted all the technical questions for the night. I hope that people save them up for the coming weeks ahead, because there's only so much talk I can do about viruses and such. But nevertheless, let me let it drop for a second, and I'll give you my little spiel about how the coronavirus is doing these days.
Yeah, Roy, WB2BX1, Echo Link.
Frank, what can I do you for?
Yeah, okay. You know, when somebody keys the machine, it locks out Echo Link, so I was having difficulty getting in here. I wanted to comment, make a couple of quick comments on a friend's experience with the short whip antennas. Shall I go ahead? Frank.
Yeah, sure, Frank. Please, tell us what you know about them.
Okay, very good. Yeah, a friend of mine out on the West Coast operates from a ground floor apartment in Concord, California, using short whip antennas, I think the Miracle Whip or something similar. He is a very patient experimenter, probably does a lot more experimenting than most of us would have the patience for. But in any case, he gets what I think are outstanding results under very poor propagation conditions by very carefully cutting and tuning radials. And I've read that elsewhere, that the key to using a short whip or using one of these, what AEA used to call, a DX handy. AEA has one on 10 meters. I know there are some Chinese and Japanese made ones for 40, and somebody just mentioned for 20 meters. The key is to have a counterpoise. And I know from my own experience, a vertical will not work effectively, obviously, without a counterpoise. And I think you're exactly right on the loops. They're very high Q devices. If you're going to sit on one frequency, they're probably reasonably good. I know also one I tried years ago had negative gain over a dipole, so I wasn't happy with it. I had some, my dad and I had some regular dipoles up, so we decided it wasn't an effective antenna for us. And anyway, that's my comment, Roy. Roy, I also had a comment on something I heard on Planetary Institute's Daily Space podcast on Friday. Would you like me to mention that now or come back a little later for the space report and talk about that?
Yeah, Frank, probably the best approach would be to take to hold off with that so it's contained in the space report, and I'm sure Paul is going to have an opinion about it. As far as going back to the lossiness of short and vertical, I would agree that an important aspect of any vertical is radial system. If you're going to elevate it significantly above ground, you only need three to kind of offset any kind of weird directionality. You know, you need a counterpoise of some kind, and it's best to have it in three different directions so that it makes it an omnidirectional device. If you're going to put it close to the ground, you're worried about ground absorption and ground coupling, and then you need, as much as 36 different radials. And there's a big argument of exactly how long they should be, how short they should be, and what if it's a multi-band vertical, you have different lengths of radials, and that can keep HF busy for a long, long time. But the verticals are very good, but they will still suffer the same problems when you shrink them in that the radiation resistance goes down, the Q goes up, and the insertion losses and efficiencies can get undermined. I mean, you might just be very lucky and be in the right place at the right time with the right propagations, and it goes wonderful. As far as dipoles versus magnetic loops, generally speaking, I would agree. A well-designed, resonant, full-length dipole that's elevated properly above ground will be more beneficial than a magnetic loop. The benefit of the magnetic loop is it takes up a lot less space, and you find a problem coming up. So that's my little 2 cents worth on those things. Frank, do you want to respond? I don't know if I'm giving you enough time to key up the repeater.
Yeah, very good. I was just not close. I was going to say to the radio, but I'm actually on an iPhone talking through Echo. And, yeah, I think the I think you're right on that. I had a ground-mounted one of these 14 ABT WB verticals for many years with two ground rods ground-mounted, and my experience was it worked well on 40 meters, and it worked very poorly on the higher frequencies. And I understand that based on the physics of the way ground-mounted verticals work, is they're just not going to work above 10 megahertz. Go ahead, Roy.
I think if they're cut to the right size, they should work decently. I've never heard that there is a size limitation for the overall design, one way or the other.
Yeah, I don't really know. I saw an article on this online many years ago, and it seemed to mirror my experience that without a real radio system, a vertical with ground rods apparently can work below 10 megahertz, but will not work well above 10 megahertz. That, as I said, that seemed to mirror my experience, and I got very poor results above 40 meters. 40 meters was the only band where the vertical really worked effectively with ground rods, because of the way the backyard was configured, and you know, the fact that it wasn't our backyard, it was a landlord's backyard. We couldn't play ground radials, we could only do the two ground rods. Anyway, whatever it's worth, Roy, that was my experience. Go ahead.
Okay, very good, Frank. I'm glad to have you aboard to give us your experience with that. There are reams and reams of reports and magazines and QST, QES, and other places of guys who are sitting around doing all kinds of interesting measurements where they modify the length of the radials, the number of the radials, and the frequencies up and down and sideways, and they come up with all these esoteric findings. You know, people kind of have this magic number 36 for a ground-based vertical antenna. You can get by with less, but apparently the diminishing return crops up around 36 generally, from what I've read. That, you know, if you have 36 and you go and you add another 10 to them, you're not going to really find much difference in the way of efficiency. But, you know, I mean, a lot of antennas kind of shouldn't sort of work according to theory, but in practical terms they do. So there was a gentleman on the technical net who at one point had an antenna that was basically just lying on the ground that had no real reason to work, but it worked great for him. So I'm glad you were able to add your experience to this question. Okay, I'm watching W2BZ Ridge on Echo Link T, the repeater, but you're not putting out any audio.
Yeah, are you copying me now, Roy? WB2BX.
Yes, Frank, I can hear you. Go ahead, please.
Okay. I what I started to say, and I don't think you copied, was that I've noticed with some people is they feel their antenna's working great, but they really haven't done any comparisons either with other antennas at their site or with other people's stations. I recall once years ago running a 20-meter phone band, and the guy up the block from me in Canarsie, Brooklyn, was running one of these mini products, mini beams, and he swore it was a fantastic antenna, when in fact we did some comparisons, I think into Europe, we found there was absolutely no difference. He actually had no gain over a dipole, though he swore the antenna worked great. So I think a lot of what you hear people say antennas work great is based on you know, no baseline and no comparative data.
I think, unfortunately, that's the problem, and it's rife on say, HF. I won't say ignorance is bliss, but anecdotal evidence is not terribly useful. And most of hams offer anecdotal evidence. They'll tell you how far they were able to communicate, which is great. Again, I cite the guy with the 100-watt light bulb sitting on a wooden lamppost who got a work goal state certificate out of it. So, you know, if you're lucky or if you put in a lot of time, you can do amazing things with antennas that really aren't terribly well designed. But, you know, it's gotten to be a little bit easier to do legitimate testing. There's technology out there where you can transmit a low signal and then go to the internet and find the map that lights up with your ID. And there's all kinds of fun new stuff out there to do that. In the old days, you'd have to get a field strength meter and walk around the neighborhood, which would be probably a pain in the backside.
Whiskey 2, Bravo Zulu.
Rich, W2BZ recognizes. The problem, though, is that Frank, WB2BXO, is also using Echo Link. And when you trigger that Echo Link, it blocks his Echo Link, so I'm never quite sure whether he has anything to say. So I'll just ask Frank if he has any response that he'd like to give.
By the way, Roy, a little bit noisy sometimes, so that you know that. Again,
your signal was rather noisy.
There, Roy. You might want to increase power, or maybe increase your antennas. I don't know, your antenna, whatever you have there. Giving your spiel on the coronavirus later on, you might want to get a better, a more power output, a better antenna location. Over to you.
Okay. How is this one?
That's better. Time will tell when you're making some comments and answer some questions. Further continue. Sometimes you're good, sometimes you're not. But as time goes on, we'll let you know. This is KB2MAR.
Okay, yeah, if there's a problem with my signal, please feel free. I'm trying to do 18 different things simultaneously. As I'm talking on this radio, I have another radio that I don't want to descend, where I'm feeding the audio stream to everyone who can't get on the radio, and also recording it in case Mike loses the recording of the technical mess. So I'm doing a few dozen things at once, so please feel free to help along. Anyone else with any questions or topics of a technical nature this fine evening before I go on to the science talk?
I was wondering, the gentleman who was talking about a 20-meter handy talk, if that would be the term for it, with a whip, how would you design a counterpoise system for a setup like that? Go ahead.
KG2RY.
Please, David, tell him. I mean, basically, as far as I can see, your body is going to be the counterpoise, whether you like it or not. But please tell us, David.
QSL. Well, so far, from my experience, I had a 38-inch whip, and I had the exact equal antenna as a counterpoise. I used a hamstick dipole mount, and I just screwed them in, you know, and it worked about 80 kilohertz of bandwidth, and I made a few contacts, surprisingly so, from inside my apartment. I guess my question, you know, would be back to you, is there such a thing as a shortened 20-meter dipole? Go ahead.
Yes, there is, and basically you just described one. The hamsticks sell little couplers that you can screw two of them back to back, and it's basically a shortened dipole that has a inductance tuned network that electronically tunes it to resonance using those inductors. So that's a shortened vertical. It suffers from the same problems any shortened antenna does, in that you have a higher Q, a shorter bandwidth, and in addition, because it's a dipole, you have to be concerned about its distance from the ground. If you place a dipole too close to the ground, the reflections will distort the takeoff angle such that you'll end up with a near vertical incident skywave antenna, which will be great for local communication, but not terribly good for anything else.
Now with a quick comment.
Yes, please, comment.
I remember a while back watching a spy movie. I don't know if it was whatever it was, Mission Impossible or what that felt it was that, but I remember what the name was.
Sorry, but you're about 95% noise at this point, and the signal kind of died a few times. So I don't know exactly if there's something wonky going on with the repeater, or your antenna, or there's, you know, I don't know. There's something that's not connecting correctly. So check your visor and your power output, and wiggle your antenna if you can. But for some odd reason, it's a lot of noise.
How copy this to the phone point? How does it sound now?
A little bit better. I can hear all the words. I understand them. There is, though, about 50% noise in your signal.
Okay, I'll make it brief. I saw in a spy movie, I don't know if it's just this equipment exists, the person had a walkie-talkie that had a little loop antenna on top of it. Basically, it looked like an... like a script E, how a loop looks like, except it was right on top of the HT. And I don't know if those antennas exist in real life. Over to you.
Well, there are loop antennas for high frequency UHF, VHF. It's very commonly used when people are doing little fox hunting for radio transmitters. It gives you good directionality, although you don't know if you point it towards it or away from it. You can either add an extra vertical to get a sense of which direction it's coming from, or you can just move away and see if the signal is stronger, or move forward and see if the signal's stronger, get a sense. But small loop antennas are often used, usually for direction finding, in my experience. But I assume you could use them in general practice.
Because they were transmitting on it, but I don't know if that was because of the movie. I mean, it was a pretty large sized HT with a loop right on top of it. So I know it was because of the movie to make it look different or whatever. I mean, I just thought I'd throw that in. Maybe you can go that route to communicate with a sideband of the with, you know, an HF at 15 watts. I think that's better than a vertical, though. That's my opinion on top of the HT.
Well, yeah, but the problem, as always, is mechanical. That you need to have a magnetic loop has a higher and higher Q and a lower and lower bandwidth and less and less efficiency the smaller you shrink it to. So, in relation to the band that you're transmitting on. So if you're transmitting on a 20-meter band and you have, say, I don't know, a 2.5-foot diameter loop, that would work great. If you shrink that down to a 6-inch loop, chances are the efficiencies would be minimal. You know, you'd get across a signal, but it would be something at a 30, 40 decibel loss.
Now, comparing that to a vertical on the HP as opposed to the tiny loop, what difference would it be off the offhand, would you know?
Probably a loaded vertical would have less problems, generally speaking. One of the things every so often someone will do and get deeply confused if they ever get a vector network analyzer or basically an antenna analyzer is that they'll plug it into their whip antenna of their handy talkie and wonder where's the resonance. You know, it doesn't seem to be resonant. It kind of goes all over the place. The problems are manifold in that it's not totally resonant by itself. You have to factor in the handy-talkie, and you have to factor in your body being partially the ground, the counterpoise and such. So I don't know if you can theoretically build a equally efficient magnetic loop, but it would take up more area, if you will. Whereas the vertical is just straight up and just kind of two-dimensional, the loop is kind of a flat thing and a little bit more cumbersome. So probably for the sake and the reason why almost every time you've ever seen a handy-talkie, people are using something like a electronically resonating shortened vertical as opposed to a loop is probably for mechanical reasons, and the efficiency differences wouldn't be enough to warrant playing games with the tuning network of the loop.
KG2R1.
Yes, David.
Well, you know, I had this thought about making a 20-meter dipole also work on 17 and make it about as short as a 17-meter dipole. You would take the antenna, you would have two lengths of wire, then you'd have two coils, and then you have two extensions. Would that be difficult to do?
Oh, it wouldn't be difficult at all. I mean, you know, in a slightly different form, that's basically what trapped dipoles are, except that they operate automatically and electronically. They shorten at the higher frequency from the trap, and then they let the lower frequency through the entire length and resonate from that way. So there's a whole bunch of little tricks you can play with simple wire antennas.
Thanks, Roy.
Welcome. Rich, W2BZ, I realize it's problematic because you're operating through EchoLink and there's a time delay with keying down the repeater. So if you have any other comments, I'll just let the repeater rest for a little while and give you a chance to key up.
Do it for now, Roy. By the way, your signal had it by 50% when you switched over to whatever antenna you or radio you're using now. But that's it for me, Roy. Thanks. Whiskey Zulu.
Okay, very good, Rich. Glad to have you aboard. In case no one's heard, I see on my screen that the Dayton Invention is canceled for 2020, unfortunately, because of the coronavirus. Once again, anyone with any technical questions or topics before I turn to science, please give us your first name and your call sign.
N2POI.
Yes, N2PLA. What's your first name?
Okay, it's N2PLI. My name is Harvey. I'm in East Meadow. I haven't been on in a while, but is there any way that the repeaters now could support, like, let's say, really early 90s, what do they call it, with the telephone and stuff?
you mean touch tone? You mean in the old days before cell phone was king, there were connections and repeaters were very popular back then. You would use the DTMF tones from your handy talkie or a little blue box, and you would dial up people and talk. Is that what you're alluding to?
Oh, no. Actually, I was wondering if the repeaters now could support auto patch and stuff, you know, in case of emergency.
Yes, ultimately, it's an individual sort of thing. The guy running the repeater, if he has that equipment, if that equipment is still available and has been completely mothballed. Offhand, I haven't heard of anyone really talking about an active auto patch repeater for a long, long time. So my gut sense would be, although there might be a couple repeaters out there from back in the old days, most repeaters would not be capable of auto patching these days.
Okay, so, yeah, everything's run through the internet, I see. Yeah. Oh, okay. You never know. Okay, this is said to feel like. Thank you.
You're welcome, Harvey. Please come by any old time. Auto patch, you know, had its time, and it was, if you recall what mobile telephones looked like around that era, they looked like army walkie-talkies almost. They weren't even really mobile. They were, you know, automobile-based because they probably weighed a couple of pounds. They were, you know, a foot or 2 feet long. They looked semi-ridiculous looking back on it with our puny little cell phones. So now that everyone has at least one cell phone, and a lot of people surprisingly have two cell phones, it's not really that necessary anymore. You could make a case for what happens if some calamity occurs and the cell phones go down or they get jammed. But unfortunately, if you check most repeaters, they don't have a lot of emergency measures built into them. The last hurricane that hit us knocked most repeaters down, not good old Limar, but most of the other repeaters were gone. So unfortunately, they're not really designed to be bomb-proof. So auto patch was a great thing in its day, and it's probably the reason why everyone remembers so many people using repeaters, and usually the end of that story is what happened. Why aren't there the same people jamming on repeaters like they used to be? And part of it, I think, was auto patch. It came and it's gone. It was a great technology, but other solutions have taken over for auto patch.
Okay, yes, but I'll tell you, with the coronavirus here and stuff, there might be, technicians getting sick there and stuff. They won't be able to, keep everything going there and stuff. So, yeah, I believe an old-fashioned type auto patch should be available with any DTMF walkie-talkies that do POI.
Okay, I certainly can understand. It's a kind of a case of belt and suspenders. Sometimes you need both, just in case. The problem, though, is that most of the infrastructure that fed into that system seems to be gone. So I guess you could buy them used and fix them when they're broken, but there's no turnkey operation that I think has that asset to it anymore. But I agree with you. It's always nice to have backups for your backup. Anyway, anyone else with any questions or topics tonight of a technical nature before we move on to science?
Just quickly, Roy, Whiskey. Auto patch was that term that I always hate, but it was the booze. I think that's the term back when. It was something that separated out ham radio from everything else because we were the only ones from a car that were able to talk through the telephone. And it was exciting back then, to say the least. W2BZ.
Yes, Rich, I agree with you. That was one of our last gee whiz technical moments, unfortunately. We still have a lot of gee whiz moments available, but they're a little bit esoteric, and it's far easier to wrap your brain around, I don't need a telephone, I can communicate with my handy talkie here to anyone on any phone, versus I can communicate with satellites and the ISS that's circling the Earth, or I can bounce the signals off the moon. It's a little bit more detached for people, unfortunately, so I agree with you. That was one of our last general public see what I can do moments. It's a shame because, again, there's still a lot of things that we can do, but again, it takes a little time to explain it to people, and they don't have the time to listen, I guess.
Hit the icon at the right time to be able to transmit on Echolink is a bit maddening, but yes, it was something that I was so proud to be the operator, because I could say I could talk to any telephone from my car. So that's it. I guess it's Corona time. Corona Ice King time. Whiskey 2, Bravo Zulu.
Okay, thanks, Rich, for participating. I tell you, what a terrible name to have given this virus. You know, I'm in the back of my head, I keep on wondering if the coronavirus is going to do for Corona beer or what AIDS did to, there was something called a dietary supplement and AIDS to lose weight. Totally killed that company entirely. So I hope Corona beer doesn't have bad business after all this. So let me drop and we'll get into our little COVID-19 news. Okay, as far as the nomenclature, because we were discussing this last week, and it's very soft and squishy, the virus itself is designated by the label SARS, SARS-CoV-2. The disease caused by the infection from that virus is designated COVID-19. Calling it something like the Wuhan flu will probably get you labeled as a racist by the People's Republic of China, who apparently have already tried to label it as the Japanese coronavirus and as the Italian coronavirus before they apparently have recently settled on blaming us in the United States for bioengineering it and releasing it onto a Wuhan, China via some unidentified U.S. Army officers of some kind. Anyway, I've heard COVID-19 used sort of interchangeably for the disease as well as the infectious agent, so I'm just going to use COVID-19. Most recent research now suggests that the virus can persist in the air for about 3 hours and can survive on some surfaces like plastics or stainless steel for as long as 2 to 3 days, they say. It can survive on cardboard, apparently, for as long as 24 hours, but on things like copper surfaces, it can only survive up to about 4 hours. Now, none of this is written in stone. It's all possible to change as researchers find new values for these times, how long it can last. So at this point, those are the time intervals for it on a surface. Now, last time I checked the statistics, which was an hour and a half ago, there were 169,152 detected cases and spread over 157 countries and territories. There have been 6,494 reported deaths to this virus. The World Health Organization believes that the COVID-19 virus mortality is 3.4% as of March 3rd. I still tend to think that that's way too high, and ultimately, even epidemiologists are saying that it'll probably be something more like 0.5%, which also already makes it five times more deadly than the common influenza. the rate of infections have slowed a lot in China, according to them. They've had only 5 cases in the past 24 hours, apparently. Let me drop for a second. Okay, the country with the second highest reported infection count is now Italy, with a count of 24,747, with 1,809 deaths related to this virus, with an announced new death rate of 133 additional new deaths from the virus in just the past day. Here in the U.S. of A., we have had 3,533 cases of the infection and 63 deaths related to the virus. We had our first 3 deaths in New York recently. One of them was an 82-year-old woman with COPD who died in Brooklyn. We continue to lack the ability to test for this infection in significant numbers adequately. The World Health Organization has shipped testing kits to more than 57 countries. China had 5 commercial tests on the market 1 month ago and can now do reportedly 1.6 million tests a week. South Korea has tested more than 240,000 people so far. The federal government has announced that they had eased most of the red tape involved in authorizing the COVID-19 viral test. They expected 1 million kits available by last week, with a total of 5 million test kits to be produced, even though it was added that we won't need that many. So far, unfortunately, only 16,000 tests have been performed in the United States. They're talking about releasing 1.9 million tests starting this week. We'll see if they keep their promise this time. Anyway, stay tuned. This will still get worse before it gets better. And now, if anyone has any questions on this subject, please feel free.
2HUC with a question.
2HUC, what's your question?
Roy, do you have any idea why it seems that the fatality rate is so high in Italy as compared to, say, like here? I mean, do they have a higher precedence of underlying illness, or any ideas why it's so high there as opposed to here? KD2HUC, back to net.
Well, at this point, we don't know all the specifics. It might that they have more elderly in those areas. Also, the big problem is that we're not temporally in the same place of this curve. They're about 10 days past us. So, you know, if 10 days from now we stick with the same death rate, then great for us. What will probably happen, unfortunately, is over the next 10 days, we will somewhat mimic Italy's curve. As it spreads the number of infected people, you'll get a lot of people who are clinically normal. Only about 10 to 20% of infected people have serious health problems. But those are very serious, and if you don't have proper technology to support them, can lead to more deaths. One of the many problems going on in Italy is that their death rates are going beyond their ability to manage the problem. So they have shifted from simple hospital into almost combat triaging, where they have to select the healthiest of the unhealthy people that they use for their respirators and their respiratory technicians and their aggressive treatment. So it's a combination of things, and it's also a difference in time span. So we'll have a better idea of what possibly Italy is doing wrong if a week to 10 days from now we're still in much better position. If not, then it's just we're all going that way. The other problem is in believing people. I tend to believe the Koreans. The Koreans have done a great deal of testing. I have problems with the Chinese. They have this tendency to obfuscate and confuse facts and change numbers and do all kinds of strange things. I have similar problems with the Iranians because their death rates didn't make any sense at first, although as time goes on and their reporting was a little bit more accurate, it tended to make sense. So all these numbers, unfortunately, are in a great deal of flux.
I would put a question.
What is your question?
Yeah, this is M2HVR. Well, my question is, I mean, we've all been talking, I know the virus started in China, and it spread through Asia and everything, and now Europe. But did they ever actually pin down to what caused the virus in the first place? And what is the cause of it?